Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 21st November 2014. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Marchers to Step Out for Winchester, Silver Hill Legal Challenge Back On, and Revealed 200 Home Plan for Romsey Road Police HQ. So, can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Marchers to Step Out for Winchester. Groups to join Winchester Deserves Better protest. Campaigners are hoping the City Council will take note of their concerns about development in the district when they march on the Guildhall on November the 29th. Organisers are hoping that hundreds of people will attend the demonstration, tapping into the unhappiness that many people feel about a lack of consultation from the City Council. Groups poised to march include Save the Wreck, campaigning on the River Park Leisure Centre, and Winchester Deserves Better, which is battling the Silver Hill scheme. Organiser Mike Caldwell said he hoped the march will reflect the disquiet that people feel over the Barton Farm 2000 home development that is set to start next year and the threats to Bushfield Camp, Chesil Street Open Air Car Park and the cattle market. Mr Caldwell said, "We hope to get as many people as possible. I've been very involved with Save the Wreck and one thing that struck me is that there are a lot of diverse groups unhappy about a lack of transparency and proper consultation. This march will pull all these different groups together. We want to make a big statement. There are lots of unhappy people in Winchester at the way things are being handled that will affect the city for years to come." Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who is leading the campaign against Silver Hill, said, "In the last few weeks, very many people have told me of their concerns about major development proposals in Winchester, including those at Chesil Street, Station Approach and River Park. Whether it's fair or unfair criticism in each case, there is a general perception that the decision-making process lacks transparency and that only lip service is paid to public consultation. Others propose the idea of a march, and its purpose is simply to convey the message to the council that Winchester residents are not happy with this situation. I hope the council will listen." Council leader Rob Humby rejected claims that the council had lacked transparency in its dialogue with the public. He said, "One thing these diverse issues have in common is extensive public consultation. Often this has been consultation over many months or even years, and it has led to significant changes and improvements to proposals. Do certain groups refuse to accept that there has been extensive public consultation simply because the outcome is not to their liking? The marchers are due together at River Park at 11 a.m. before leaving at 11:15 a.m. The route has yet to be confirmed, but they are due at the Guildhall in the Broadway by noon for short speeches. Save the Wreck staged a protest fun day at River Park last May, attended by rock star Frank Turner. Mr Caldwell said he feared that recording commitments will prevent Mr Turner from attending this time."
And on the same track, Silver Hill Legal Challenge Back On. Judicial review after High Court U-turn. A campaign to stop Winchester's controversial Silver Hill scheme has been revitalised after the High Court reversed its decision to block a legal challenge against civic chiefs. Winchester City Council will now face a judicial review after allowing developer Henderson to propose dropping a bus station and affordable housing from the £165 million regeneration project. The offensive was launched by City Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who says the latest version of the scheme will ruin the city centre. The Hampshire Chronicle can also reveal that a second legal challenge against the council is in the pipeline concerning an improper planning application process. Councillor Gottlieb's call for a review was thrown out by the High Court in October, but was reinstated in a dramatic U-turn on Tuesday. Mr Justice Lynn Blom ruled that there was an arguable and significant case to be made that the council unlawfully allowed Henderson to propose the changes without putting the project back out to tender, allowing other developers to bid for it. In August, the council allowed Henderson to propose replacing a planned bus station with a large departmental store and on-street bus interchange. It also cut the number of homes to be provided from 287 to 177, controversially removing all 100 affordable units which were originally proposed. The court had previously ruled that the decade-old development agreement allowed for alterations, something the council maintains, but Councillor Gottlieb has now won the right to argue that the changes were material and should be therefore have constituted a new scheme. Councillor Gottlieb said, "To say we, the Winchester Deserves Better campaign, are pleased and relieved would be an understatement. I feel a little vindicated that we've made better progress this time. This is the next part of a long battle." He also told the Chronicle that his lawyers have served a letter to the council warning it of a possible second legal challenge against what he called an improper planning application process. A council spokesman said its decision to allow Henderson to propose the changes was taken in the light of legal advice from the external council. The spokesman added, "The city council is focused on preparing its case for the next hearing date to defend its decision. The legal arguments on this point do not affect the council's ability to determine the planning applications now before it, and therefore at this stage there are no plans to alter the date on which the council is scheduled to determine these. The planning committee will decide on the latest Silver Hill application at a special meeting on December the 11th. If approved, the project will lie in wait ahead of the High Court's decision. After that, the future of the development is unclear. The judicial review hearing is expected to take place over 2 days in January. The judge ruled that it should be scheduled as soon as possible to avoid undue delay in justice. The City Council has set aside £100,000 to defend the case." The news comes after City Council leader, Councillor Bob Humby, accused Councillor Gottlieb of undermining the democratic process by challenging the scheme with alternative proposals. In a written answer to a question at full council meeting earlier this month, he said, "Unlike Councillor Gottlieb, I do not see it as my role to undermine the democratic process by promoting alternatives which have yet to be shown to be feasible." Councillor Gottlieb hit back at the criticism, saying, "Councillor Humby has a very strange sense of democracy."
Revealed. 200 home plan for Romsey Road Police Headquarters. Plans to build a housing estate on the site of Hampshire Police's ageing Winchester headquarters have been revealed. The forces base in Romsey Road could be demolished and replaced with 200 homes in one of the city's biggest new developments. It is hoped that the site will provide much-needed affordable housing close to the city centre. Most of the new homes will be one- and two-bedroom flats, with a handful of bigger apartments and 14 large townhouses. The apartment blocks, ranging from 3 to 6 storeys, will replace the 9-storey police tower in West Hill, which many view as an eyesore. Permission to build 294 tightly packed flats on the West Hill site was granted in 2007. But developer Barclay Homes has cut the number of units by almost a third, allowing for a more open design which is said will better suit the area. 80 flats will be affordable, available at below-value market rates, if the new scheme is approved, with contributions to the local infrastructure set to be negotiated with the civic chiefs in the next few months. The project also includes green space, footpaths, and an underground car park to reduce congestion. Hampshire Constabulary has been trying to leave the 1960s base for almost a decade as it sells off buildings to cope with multi-million pound government cuts. Earlier this month, the Hampshire Chronicle revealed that Northwall Station is set to close, while last month the force sold Alpha Park, its empty Chandlesford base, at a loss. Barclay fought off dozens of rivals to secure the prime Winchester site this summer. Development director David Gilchrist said that he wouldn't have any problem with paying £735,000 towards roadworks, public space, footpaths and playground, as civic chiefs demanded in the original planning permission. "We're hoping that people will like it," he said. "We're trying to put a good quality development in there. We will be removing the existing building, which I imagine quite a lot of people will be pleased about." But some residents expressed concern at a public exhibition last Thursday that traffic congestion on Romsey Road, a busy commuter route, would be strained by the influx of hundreds of new residents. Claire Goodman, 51, of West End Close, said, "It's better than what came before. At least it's got a bit of variety. It's just what's going to go up and down the road." Barclay will publish a traffic study in the next few weeks, but said it expected congestion to ease when the police base closes because many officers park in unofficial bays.
That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bull, Una Lucy Bull, in Winchester Hospital, aged 87. Calvert, Jean Margaret Calvert, peacefully, aged 83. Cole, Robert Cole, peacefully at home, aged 66. Edgar, Roy Grant Edgar, peacefully in Winchester, aged 93. Edwards, David Oliver Edwards, at home, aged 75. Etheridge, Doris Joan Patricia Etheridge, aged 84. Farr, Kathleen Farr. Foster, Susan Carol Foster, peacefully. Frampton, Ronald William Frampton, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 91. Gibbons, Evelyn Rosa Gibbons, peacefully at Brendan Care, Winchester, aged 92. Kurukularachi, Leonard Kurukularachi, peacefully, aged 80. Raspas, Fred Raspas, aged 89. Richardson, Michael Richardson, aged 74. Smee, Peter John Smee, peacefully in hospital, aged 69. Webster, Kenneth G. Webster, peacefully, aged 80. And Wilkinson, Audrey Wilkinson, at Westacre Nursing Home. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you.
And Christian comment is written this week by the very Reverend Trevor Beeson, and the headline is Taxing Questions of Morality. Everyone would welcome a reduction in personal income tax. And a couple of weeks ago, the Prime Minister declared it to be a moral duty of governments to make such a reduction in order that people might spend more of their hard-earned money. But this raises fundamental questions about the nature of modern society and the place of taxation within it. If we were living on a remote island, responsible for our own survival, tilling the ground and building a shelter, none of these questions would arise. We are, in fact, living in a complex, interdependent society in which few aspects of our lives are unrelated to the lives of others. The defence of our country, the security of our neighbourhoods, the supply of light and heat, the creation and distribution of food, transport systems and education are obvious examples of this. Moreover, our personal income depends in parts on the efforts of others. Prudence, as well as morality, requires, therefore, that all these activities are organised in such a way as to benefit all in the spirit of mutual responsibility. Wealth creation and taxation are basic tools in the meeting of human need at every level. A society based on Christian morality will always have regard for those who, for a variety of reasons, age, health, lack of opportunity, misfortune, are unable to make the fullest contribution to the creation of wealth, of the provision of service. These need to be treated with compassion and fairness, not as a tiresome burden. They are a legitimate charge on the public purse. A Christian moral approach to taxation is not, therefore, a demand for the reduction of taxation to the lowest possible level. Rather, it is a skilled and honest assessment of the total needs of society, accompanied by a calculation of this implication for taxation. Only so can we hope create a society in which each will care for all and all will care for each, the basis of a true human community.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, and that's from Karen Barrett. Lib Dems have shot themselves in the foot. Sir, I don't often agree with Council Leader Bob Humby, but he's right when he accuses Lib Dem Minister Lord Newby of scoring political points. Government Minister's criticism for Silver Hill of November the 13th Chronicle. Unfortunately, we're likely to see many more flying visits from ministers in this election year, primed by their local parties to comment on issues they know nothing about. In this case, however, the Lib Dems appear to have shot themselves in the foot. In commenting on a lack of affordable housing in the Silver Hill development, Lord Newby said, "We can't have a situation where the only people who can afford to live in the city centre are the rich." He was obviously unaware that a full council meeting on July the 16th, 54 out of the total of 57 councillors, all parties, and including members of the planning committee, supported an amendment tabled by the Lib Dems endorsing the Cabinet's decision to give Henderson the option of scrapping on-site affordable housing in favour of an unspecified financial contribution, plus a meaningless commitment to a more beneficial arrangement for Winchester residents. The ongoing Silver Hill fiasco has set the council on a collision course with the public. It's almost impossible to find anyone, apart from the councillors, with a few notable exceptions, or officers with good word to say about the scheme. And the Winchester March on November the 29th is an opportunity for those who care so much about this city to make our voices heard. And that's from Karen Barrett, former Winchester City Council, councillor of Byron Avenue, Winchester.
The next letter in is from Peter Lydiard, who lives in Parchment Street in Winchester, and it's headed, "Use TIC Courtyard to House City Model." Sir, I have followed with some interest the various letters on the future of Roger Brown's remarkable model of Victorian Winchester. As one of those involved in putting the model on display each year, I can concur with concerns expressed about the condition of the model. Although we take great care when taking it apart, storing it and reassembling the model each year, inevitably there is some deterioration each time it is moved. Clearly, the model would benefit from a permanent home. I am aware that much thought has been given over the years to this matter, including the contribution last week in Chronicle Letters by Andrew Rutter. I have my own suggestion. There is a three-sided courtyard immediately behind the tourist office, which is home principally to several fire escapes, and which I think would be ideal location for the model. A dedicated room opening up from the current tourist office would be perfect. It would benefit from the supervision and historical knowledge of the tourist office staff. It would be right in the heart of the city, near the dropping-off point for many visitors, and would, I'm sure, be a considerable attraction in itself. If the building of such a room could be incorporated in any new building to replace the current flat-roofed office block in Colebrook Street, so much the better. But in the meantime, could we appeal to our city councillors to apply their minds to finding at least a temporary home for the model so it can be preserved for future generations? The dedication of Roger Brown in building this model, it took him 9 years, should not be allowed to go to waste. And that's from Peter Lydiard.
This letter from Richard Stobart concerns the need to tackle overpopulation. Sir, the government's request that we should let our grass grow and our mowers rust should be adopted by everyone. We allowed our long-neglected lawn grow this year. Tall grass, clover, self-heal and other notorious weeds grew mightily, and we were duly rewarded by the company of 5 meadow brown butterflies, 2 ringlets and 1 or 2 common blues that came to spend their summer with us. We shall certainly let it grow again next year. However, as far as protecting wildlife is concerned, allowing the grass to grow is little more than a gesture that may help a few species. The infinitely complex span of living things and their intricate relationships that go to make up a parcel of our natural environment is attained only in many generations, but for reasons that always seem to be of the utmost importance at the time, we have turned farmland into treeless prairie, farms into industrial units, streams into drains, villages into towns, and towns into vast urban sprawls. Amongst all the buttons on the ministerial control consoles in London, ranging from build garden cities on the green belt, growth, 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 more wind farms, grow more food, import more skilled workers, build bullet trains, and so on, let lawn grass grow is one of the better ones to press. But it is the big blue-green-white button, the colours of Earth from space, that the ministers should push. The label on it is Tackle Overpopulation. For them, it must never be touched. It spells political suicide, they mistakenly believe. The public are once more ahead of the politicians. We can already see the effect in poor wages, overcrowded transport, inadequate housing, mass migration, and the destruction of our environmental riches. The driving force is the excessive and growing population of the county, of the country, and worldwide. The facts can be found on the website populationmatters.org. Richard Stobart, Bournefields, Twyford.
Bill Farran-Price writes, "Something seismic is going on here. Sir, the Winchester March planned for November 29th is a wake-up call to the major political parties represented on the City Council. Whatever the level of public support on the day, the rumble of discontent with our hollowed-out political parties is threatening to cascade down from Westminster and overwhelm local politics as we know it. Opposition to council development plans in the city are and have been diverse. Save the Wreck, the Silver Hill Campaign, Barton Farm, Station Approach. But the clamour for improved consultation and transparency around strategic development and planning is striking, and a common theme amongst those I have spoken to. The explosion of social media in the recent years has given local residents a vastly improved ability to access and respond to council proposals. But the new technology can only enable, it is not the message itself, and neither can it alone produce transparency and improve local democracy if there is no commitment to openness among the policymakers. Greater transparency will require a genuine commitment among city councillors to explain the economic, social and environmental drivers behind development and planning decisions in form and language that wins the support of the bulk of residents and at a bare minimum seeks to address the concerns of opponents. Until our elected representatives can move beyond their business as usual, we know best approach to the legitimate concerns of local residents, the major political parties will lose out. This process of political fragmentation has already started nationally. Claims that local politics is immune to this trend seem woefully out of touch. Local politics conducted in whispers at the back rooms of the pub is not good enough for the new generation of voters. They rightfully expect elected officials to hold council officers to account and to fight for their interests. Major parties take note. The Winchester March represents more than a bunch of whinging nimbies. There is something seismic going on here. That's from Bill Farron Price of Worthy Lane, Winchester.
This letter, headed Getting Our Just Desserts, comes from Jenny Stables, who lives in Gordon Avenue. Sir, recently the International Panel on Climate Change, after decades of research, announced that unless we drastically reduce carbon emissions, PDQ, we will be facing catastrophic and irreversible degradation of the human habitat. So the following morning, were the roads half empty as people found other ways to travel or phoned in to say they would work from home? Did workers on the national grid notice a huge dip in demand as people decided to stop using power unnecessarily? And did Mr. Cameron decide to leave all the remaining shale gas and oil in the ground in favour of pursuing the development of renewables? No. Everyone carried on as normal. It looks as if we'll be getting what we deserve, says Jenny Stables from Gordon Avenue.
And Mike Biden's letter is titled We Must Steer Clear of Jingoism. Sir, I was somewhat alarmed to read Chris Sparks' letter, Chronicle November the 13th, and his suggestion that we should have military on horseback dressed in the uniform of the day and a band as part of our remembrance of the fallen. Such displays of jingoistic military exhibitionism were what got Europe into two devastating wars in the first place. To teach his grandchildren the meaning of the poppy and the reality of war, he should take them to see one of the great battlefields, such as Verdun, where the museums and memorials are a permanent tribute to all those who fell on both sides of the conflict. Next year is the 70th anniversary of the defeat of National Socialism in Germany and peace in Europe. It is also the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo, the last great battle in which Germans and British fought side by side. For almost 300 years, our special relationship was not with the USA, but Germany. We shared so much, from the Protestant faith and members of the royal family to the celebrations of Christmas. In Reims Cathedral, a moving display remembers the Mass for Peace, celebrated in 1962. Presidents Adenauer of Germany and de Gaulle of France swore an oath that their two countries would never go to war again. Like them, we must learn to forgive, but never forget. What better way to celebrate those anniversaries next year than a joint service of remembrance and reconciliation here in Winchester Cathedral, organised and led by our civic leaders and bishop. I am sure the German ambassador will be delighted to assist, and maybe we can even have German soldiers, including veterans from Afghanistan, join ours in marching in the High Street on June the 18th. Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that was November the 21st, 1814, when the headline said that prostitution on the increase. Sir, if it is an acknowledged fact, not only that prostitution has itself increased most lamentably, but that the young and inconsiderate are, at a very early age, seduced into the paths of vice, surely there is reason to have recourse to any remedy that would check so great an evil. I cannot conclude without lamenting that the female asylum for the reception of girls from 12 to 17 years of age has hitherto been so little supported. And the second item, the annual appointment of sheriffs took place at the Court of Exchequer on Saturday last, when the following nominations took place. County of Southampton, Henry Combe Compton, Esquire of Minstead, Henry Bosanquet, Esquire, Clanville Lodge, and Sir John Walter Pollen, Bart, of Rednam, Wiltshire, George Eyre, Esquire, of Branshaw, John Osborne, Esquire, of Melchett Park, and John Hussey, Esquire, of New Sarum.
The next piece of news comes from 100 years ago, November the 21st, 1914, and it's headed, Women's Corps trying to solve two problems. Sir, it is daily becoming more evident that the widespread distress and sorrow caused by this devastating war must be met by new methods of organisation. The Women's Emergency Corps, which has been in existence since the first days of the war, is endeavouring to solve two problems. On the one hand, we are faced by the distress of thousands of middle-class women, many of them trained workers, deprived of their employment by the war, many now thrown for the first time into an overcrowded labour market. On the other hand, there are children to be trained, fed and cared for, anxious, sorrowful women to be helped, and boys and girls to be rescued from drifting into hopeless ways of life. Another letter. Sir, I have something to do with recruiting. In one of our villages there are, I am informed, 24 young fellows who ought to enlist and will not. They have been appealed to at a village meeting held by the district recruiting committee. They have been visited and urged by the recruiting sergeant to do their duty, but they steadily refuse to come forward, their invariable answer being, when the government wants us, they will take us. They have got plenty of men. What is to be done in cases like this? Why not put in force the Militia Ballot Act?
And I have two items from 50 years ago, November the 21st, 1964. And the first deals with expenditure on the roads. Although the estimated expenditure on county roads in Hampshire during the next financial year will probably amount to more than 2.75 million, it is hoped that the proportion to be met directly from the rates will be less than £250,000. At Winchester on Monday, Hampshire County Council Roads and Bridges Committee approved 1965 to 66 expenditure under this heading, which does not include ministry-controlled trunk roads, of £2,761,817. All but £493,905 of which is expected to be met by loan. And the second item, Mr. R.N. Hunt of East Tivoli is the county's champion ploughman this year at the Hampshire County Ploughing Championships at Upper Farm, Headbournworthy. On Saturday, Mr. Hunt furrowed past his competitors to win not only the overall championship, but the Scats.
And up to date almost on 25 years ago, November 24th, 1989. Church site clearance finished. The Otterbourne Conservation Group has now undertaken the daunting task of clearing the site of the old medieval church and delineating its foundations. They intend to raise some of the tombstones. Indeed, there are still villagers who have ancestors buried there. Already the spoil heap left by the university archaeological dig has been moved and the foundation area levelled. Grass seed has been sown over the chancel area. A fascinating talk by local historian Mr. Graham Goff was given in the village hall. And the second item, a heavy acorn crop is killing ponies and cattle in the New Forest, the Court of Verdure has heard on Monday. Now forest groups are calling on for an extension of the panage season until mid-January. The panage season is the time when pigs are allowed to eat the acorn crop, which doesn't harm them, but which can sicken or kill ponies and cattle.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Michael and will be followed by First Person, read by Brian. Thank you, Michael.
Editorial comment is headed, Marches Sending a Strong Message. Embattled council chiefs are facing an unwelcome double whammy. Faced with an embarrassing protest march by residents upset about a lack of consultation and transparency on a number of issues, the City Council learned this week that it must contest a judicial review over Silver Hill. Organisers of the march on Saturday, November the 29th, are hoping that hundreds of people will descend on the Guildhall, tapping into the unhappiness that many of them feel. Groups poised to march include Save the Wreck, campaigning on the River Park Leisure Centre, Winchester, and Winchester Deserves Better, battling the Silver Hill scheme, Bushfield Camp, Chesil Street car parking, and the station approach and the cattle market redevelopment. This will no doubt be an unwelcome distraction to under-fire council chiefs. Former council leader Keith Wood was accused of not listening to the concerns of residents, and now it seems his successor, Rob Humby, is falling into the same trap. Whether the general criticism of the council is fair or not, the authority must take notice of the unrest among many of its taxpayers and find better ways of engaging with them.
And this is the letter from Khaliz Aziz, and it's on It's the Economy, Stupid. These days, the economic climate seems to match the weather. Dull. Japan has gone back into recession despite so-called stimulus courtesy of Abenomics, and Germany, alleged powerhouse of the Eurozone, narrowly missed going back into recession. Apparently Greece is doing better, posting record growth amongst nations using the euro, albeit from a very low base. Hard to know how they could ever be forced to be reckoned with. You can't export sunshine, and most people, unlike me, are no fans of Retsina. David Cameron made a gloomy G20 speech in Brisbane, raising the spectre of a third wave of recession. Why do they have to keep flying off to different locations when all countries connected to New York or London, where a purpose-built conference centre will be a much cheaper to run and police than all this political tourism? Don't they know there's a recession on? I've just heard a very plausible economist opine on the situation on the radio. Her view, when questioned about how we get out of this jam, was more of the same, steady as she goes. I beg to differ. The definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. We've tried quantitative easing, a posh phrase for printing money and throwing it at the economy. The result? Booming share prices benefiting a few, but not really creating a sustainable recovery. The European Bank is still swerving that idea, but funnily enough, the same people who did well out of the British and US QA are urging them to give it a whirl. There's another way. Cut taxes. Cue howls from the usual suspect who truly believe their brand of economics is having nothing and wanting to share it with everyone. When I look at my business, just turned 31 years and still here, just, and add together the tax paid by the business and my employees, it's the biggest chunk of the budget. My staff have been through short time working. At the beginning of the recession, I had to cut staff numbers. My own income has been significantly cut for over 5 years, and yet businesses can, like ours, and are constantly being told we're in the future, we create jobs. It's true. Around 60 families depend on our business success. We sell a significant proportion of our services abroad, so we're exporters too. And yet we're nowhere near as successful as we could be. A recent approach of the government organisation aimed at stimulating exports to India prompted a proposal which started with us paying them several thousand pounds for them to do what it is to set up with taxpayers' money to do, in other words, another tax, although, to be fair, this one is optional. So where's all the tax going? Certainly doesn't seem to be boosting business. Governments of all stripes have tried and failed to spend wisely. Move over. Money to the people.
Belgrano's alternative look at the news this week has but one item, and is headed, Santa's little helper leaves an unwanted present. It was not the present children were hoping for when Santa's little helper came to visit a high street boutique last Thursday. Jigsaw opened for late for Winchester's Christmas lights switch on, treating revellers to mulled wine, nibbles, and a visit from Mickey Potter, a miniature Shetland pony. Mickey, thought to be Britain's smallest Shetland, came complete with Santa outfit to entertain the crowds. But the festivities had to be put on hold after the pint-sized pony left a deposit on the shop floor. Children laughed and took pictures through the window, much to the embarrassment of the animal's owner, who works in the store. Luckily, customers had dispersed by the time Mickey left his unfortunate gift. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Mickey with a few children and its owner. Now, this week's announcements, and we start with what's on. There are several events on in and around Winchester, and not surprisingly, there are a lot of Christmas fairs and markets taking place. Here's a selection. On Thursday the 27th of November at Ropley Parish Church from 6 to 8 p.m. On Saturday the 29th of November in the Winchester Discovery Centre from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. In St Mary's Chapel, Springvale, Kingsworthy from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And in the Old Parsonage Nursing Home, Otterbourne from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Other events include, on Thursday the 4th of December at Winchester Guildhall at 6 p.m, the search for Winchester's Anglo-Saxon Minster. Three lectures by Professor Martin Biddle, Dr. John Crook and Professor Barbara York. The box office is 01962 840 500. That's 01962 840 500. And the cost is £10. On Friday the 5th of December, there are the Winchester Dialogues at the Stripe Theatre, University of Winchester, at 7 p.m. This is a conversation with Dr. Rowan Williams. The cost is £10. The box office is 01962 857275. That's 01962 857275. On Saturday the 6th of December, there are several events. The first is a book fair at Winchester Discovery Centre from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Then the Wainfleet Singers have their Christmas concert in Winchester Cathedral featuring Handel's Messiah. The box office for that is 01962 857257. That's 01962 857275. And at the Queen Elizabeth II College in Winchester College, Queen Elizabeth II Theatre in Winchester College at 7:30 p.m., there is A Thousand Years of Christmas. The box office is at the Theatre Royal, 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. And on stage next week, the Chesil Theatre presents Little Women from the 29th of November to the 6th of December. The details of how to book are on 07527 471539. That's 07527 471539. And finally, the Welsh National Opera are at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, from the 26th to the 29th of November, presenting Carmen on Wednesday and Thursday, Moses in Egypt on Friday, and William Tell on Saturday. The details and box office are 023 8071 1811. That's 023 8071 1811. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 21st of November at 7:30 a.m. and begins at 4:11 p.m. On the 26th of November, it ends at 7:39 a.m. and begins at 4:05 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we go to items of general news, and the first item is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Royal Hampshire County Hospital team walk off with Care Award. A ward at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital has won national recognition for its care of older people. The team from Clifton Ward picked up the accolade of Best Care of Older People at the Nursing Times 2014 ceremony in London. There were nearly 800 entries from 306 organisations in 20 categories. Clifton Ward sister, Rhian Cross, was at the event to accept the award and said it was an incredible experience. The feeling of winning the award is unforgettable, she said. On Clifton, we are passionate about providing excellent care and rehabilitation to older people, and we've sought new ways to empower our patients and listen to them. We love seeing the way our approach benefits our patients and are so excited to have won such a prestigious award. The awards recognise excellence in nursing and patient care. Donna Green, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Winchester Hospital, said, "Caring for elderly patients can be very difficult because they often have complex needs and don't have just one condition to treat. But as the Clifton team has shown, it can often be the most rewarding too. I am very proud of them." And there's a lovely picture with this article of 12 of the nurses standing in front of the banner, which says Nursing Times Awards 2014. And they're all looking very glamorous.
Winchester Christmas lights switch on. As Winchester's Christmas lights lit up the Broadway, an ethereal air descended on its residents, writes Lauren Howard. Glittering lights were reflected in hats adorned with tinsel, and the sound of harmonious carols could be heard all around. Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, had been building up to the moment for months, steadily planning each little detail and tweeting updates throughout the year. In August, the team picked the city's tree, which was set up and decorated last week in time for the magical moment. Some 6,000 people came to the city for the start of the Perfect English Christmas to see performances from local dance group Integra 8 and the Winchester Military Wives Choir, and a small skit from this year's Theatre Royal pantomime Sleeping Beauty. Competition winner and St Bede's primary school pupil James Wilson, six-year-old, switched on the lights following a countdown at 6 p.m. after Concept, which featured on X Factor earlier this year, entertaining the fans following by a laser and music display in the sky. Compere's Emily and Giles from Capital FM joined the Capital Street Stars to hand out numerous giveaways to the many hands reaching out for the platform. BID manager Catherine Turness said, "Having worked on the event for over 6 months, I'm so pleased the lights are now finally turned on. The team and I have worked so hard to get the city ready, but it wouldn't do it without everyone's hard work either. It really wouldn't be possible without our sponsor, Denplan. I'm also pleased we had a competition winner, James, to switch on the lights, as it really made the event feel like a community event, which is what we wanted to achieve." And there are four colourful photographs here. Crowds gathering for the switch-on on one. King Rupert, Clive Flint and Princess Aurora, Catherine Hayworth from the Winchester Theatre Royal's production of Sleeping Beauty. Competition winner James Wilson, six, turns on the lights. And crowds watching the Encore Theatre perform.
Care Coordinator wins Regional Award. When 18-year-old Daniel Langridge became a carer to look after his grandmother, he never thought it would become a career. But Daniel, now 24, has won a regional award for his work coordinating care for 130 vulnerable people in Winchester and East Lee. His rapid rise has seen him crowned the South East's Home Care Coordinator of the Year in the Great British Care Awards. He is now on the shortlist for next year's national prize. Daniel of Stanmore Lane became a carer in 2008 when his grandmother Phyllis was diagnosed with breast cancer. He moved out of the family home to nurse her. "I never came into care to win any awards," he said. "I came into care to learn ways to care for my nan. I walked into the job not knowing anything. And I was totally overwhelmed to hear my name read out," he added. "I couldn't be happier." Coordinating is one of the less glamorous jobs. You don't normally get the recognition you maybe deserve. Daniel now wants to convince youngsters, particularly young men, that care is an exciting and fulfilling industry. "This is a worthwhile job," he said. "I love my job. I love the fact that I get to help all our customers to remain living in their own home, preventing them going into residential care." Norman Murphy, Managing Director of Bluebird Care, Winchester and Eastleigh, said, "We couldn't be more proud of Daniel. He really does do a fantastic job to ensure the best continuity of care for our customers. There are many people in care who are unsung heroes, and I'm so pleased that on this occasion, Daniel's hard work and dedication to our customers and staff has been recognised on a national level. The National Great British Care Awards will be announced at a London ceremony in May 2015.
And this article by Ali Kefford concerns violence in the city jail. Gang culture is flourishing at Winchester Prison, which has experienced a marked increase in violence, according to a new Deming report. The Independent Monitoring Board has described the Category B men's jail as very much a work in progress and much remains to be done in a review published last week. A key area which the independent organisation which monitors prisoners' welfare is flagging up with the Ministry of Justice is a lack of staff. Now that the ratio between officers and inmates has dropped from 1 to 22 to 1 to 30. At Winchester, the perception is that real difficulties could result from this stretching of resources if a major incident occurred, the report observed. Inspectors also voice concerns that the admission of young offenders aged 18 to 20 to the prison a year ago has led to a marked increase in violence. There is an atmosphere of gang culture and increased boredom on some wings, they said. This volatile group congregates in groups, creating a potentially unsafe environment. Violence increased to levels not previously experienced for 4 or 5 years. The IBM report, which covers the year to May the 31st, said the new governor, David Rogers, faced considerable challenges, but also recorded an improvement in prison culture and relationships between most officers and prisoners. A custodial manager has been appointed to tackle violent assaults and antisocial behaviour. Other positive developments include increased CCTV coverage of the wings and using sniffer dogs to prevent drugs being smuggled in. A number of visitors found to be possession of drugs have been arrested and prosecuted. A new kitchen has opened and the carpentry shop was described as a beacon of excellence within the prison. Governor Mr. Rogers said, "I am pleased independent inspectors have recognised the dedication and commitment of staff, highlighting that real progress is being made at the prison, including improvements to the prison culture and the seamless transition to a new healthcare provider. Frontline staffing levels are being boosted by the ongoing recruitment campaign, and we expect all prison officer vacancies to be filled by the beginning of next year. I am confident that we will continue to build on these recent improvements." Winchester MP Steve Brine, an aide in the government's Ministry of Justice team, said, "I'm pleased we seem to be enjoying a period of stability at the prison with Dave Rogers in charge. After too many years of musical chairs in the position of governor, which allowed serious and dangerous drift."
Christmas market and ice rink open. 200 handcrafted lanterns will light the way to the official opening of Winchester's Christmas market and ice rink today, Friday. Around 2,000 people are expected to turn out for the annual event from 5:30 p.m., gathering in the cathedral's outer close for an evening packed with entertainment. The band Funk Lit Lab kick off the official market opening event at 5:30 p.m, followed by the Marwell Choir for a community sing-song. As the Lantern Brigade line up down the centre of the nave aisle, Japanese drummers will lead the parade before welcoming the Dean and the blessing of the Christmas tree. Prizes will be handed out by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, before a short firework display, weather permitting. The Christmas market opened yesterday, Thursday, running until Sunday, December the 21st, and will be open every day from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m, Sunday to Wednesday, and 10:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m, Thursday to Saturday. The ice rink runs until January the 4th, with numerous sessions from 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m, Mondays to Fridays, and 10 a.m. to 7:30 p.m, Saturdays and Sundays. It will be open at 10 a.m. on weekdays from December the 15th.
Talented student died from lethal drugs dose. 19-year-old combined legal high, ecstasy and cannabis. An ex-Peter Simmons medical student died after taking a legal high that lethally combined with the banned drug ecstasy, an inquest heard. A coroner's court heard how Douglas Ferguson had been taking on and taking in hallucinogenic substance while at the Chandlersford home of his friend Alex Pearson, whose parents were away. The drug was the antidepressant alpha-methyltryptamine, known as AMT, which can be legally bought in the UK. But in the hours leading to his death, 19-year-old Mr. Ferguson had been also taking ecstasy as well as drinking and smoking cannabis. The Bristol University student was back home visiting friends and family after completing his first year. During the course of the night, Mr. Ferguson, who was at Mr. Pearson's parents' home in Nicoll Road, kept topping up the amount of AMT he was taking, believing it was not working. However, in the early hours of the morning, Mr. Ferguson began sweating profusely and became increasingly agitated. Giving evidence from Melbourne in Australia via a video link, Mr. Pearson, his friend, said, "He smashed a vase and a flowerpot. He was throwing stuff on the floor. He was running around, being energetic and hallucinating. I thought in time it would go away." Mr. Pearson then said he had to call in the help of friends to help restrain Mr. Ferguson, who was moving outside. An ambulance man was then called, giving evidence. Paramedic Simon Surplus, who was first on the scene, found a group of youngsters around Mr. Ferguson, who was flaying his arms and contorting his face and breathing quickly. Police soon arrived on the scene. Because Mr. Ferguson was thrashing around, he had to be strapped down in the ambulance and taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Despite their best efforts, Mr. Ferguson's heart stopped and he could not be revived. Pathologist Dr. Basil Perdue said the main cause of death was sparked by mixing AMT with ecstasy. This created a deadly condition called serotonin syndrome. Concluding his inquest, Mid-Hampshire coroner Graham Short said the effect was to cause his brain to swell and bleed. "I don't think it was a deliberate overdose. I believe it was a young man who was experimenting with the effect of drugs and not realising until too late how potent they could be when taken in large quantities. Given that he was an intelligent person, quite clearly, and indeed studying medicine, it is surprising how he didn't realise how foolhardy it was." Following the death, police found drugs at Mr. Pearson's home. He pleaded guilty to possessing Class A and Class B drugs with intent to supply. He was given 200 hours unpaid work in the community.
Calling time on unplanned pub career. When Tony Senger was considering his career options as a young man in 1967, the last thing he wanted to do was run a pub. But now, 47 years later, he has called time on his career after nearly half a century of pulling pints. The 71-year-old suddenly found himself thrust behind the bar of the Woodman in Upham after his parents, who ran the pub, were involved in a car accident. Tragically, the crash killed his dad and left his mum seriously hurt. Having taken the reins back then, he hasn't looked back. But now he and his partner, Joan Mort, have retired from the historic pub, bidding farewell to scores of locals earlier this month. Mr. Senger said, "I vowed in my life I would never have a pub. But of course, when my dad got killed and mum was injured and I didn't know if she was going to live or die, somebody had to take their licence. I didn't have an option at that moment, but I have no regrets. I had a really good time throughout the years. The pub is a real hit with villagers in Upham. It dates back to the 17th century when it was called the Travellers' Inn. It is also well known in Hampshire for the spectacular flowers in its gardens and arrangements and having Britain's largest whisky collection that has attracted people even from as far afield as America. Mr. Sanger said, "I am a people's person. I will miss the people, and I'm going to hate not being here." And there are two pictures with this article. One is of Tony and Joan in the bar, which looks very attractive, with some of their customers celebrating their retirement, and a lovely picture of the front of the pub. With lovely plants and arrangements, looks very attractive indeed.
How you can help a needy child this Christmas. The Hampshire Chronicle is once again asking its generous readers to put a smile on the face of a needy local child this Christmas. The Chronicle's Christmas Toy Appeal aims to help the children of people going through difficult times. Last year's appeal was so successful that we're widening our campaign to help three Winchester charities this time around. Along with the Winchester Basics Bank, two other worthy causes, Friends of the Family and Homestart Winchester, will also benefit. The Basics Bank helps families in bed and breakfast accommodation, women fleeing domestic violence, the new unemployed waiting for benefits to start, and people who have found work but are between benefits ending and wages starting. Homestart Winchester and Districts offers free support to families with at least one child under five going through difficult times, which may include loneliness and isolation, coping with twins, triplets or several preschool children, ill health, disability and special needs, relationships difficulties, lone parenting, first-time parenting, and new babies or behavioural problems. Friends of the Family is a small, independent, Winchester-based charity which has offered confidential support to local families in difficulty for 20 years. Among the service it provides is a mums and toddlers group for preschool-aged children when home life is challenging, a dad's support group giving confidential help to men with children aged up to five, and at-home support for families with children aged 5 to 13. Where can you donate your presence? The Chronicle has teamed up with the Brooks Centre in Winchester this year, where toys can be left in the Waterstone store on the upper shopping level. Please only donate brand new toys suitable for toddlers to children aged up to 13, which should be unwrapped. Closing date for donations is Friday, December the 12th. Presents will be divided between the three chosen charities.
This next piece is an obituary, and it's in memory of Daphne Mellor. Daphne Mellor, who died aged 102, on October the 20th, lived in Hampshire for nearly 70 years. Her father was a doctor based in London, where in 1936 Daphne was employed at MI5, as secretary to a future Director General of the service. The restrictions imposed by the Official Secrets Act always remained inviolable to her. But occasionally she would let slip stories of her involvement with the abdication crisis or the shadowing of spies. In 1938, she married Harry Mellor, a doctor, and the pair enjoyed a round-the-world honeymoon. During the war, she and her sister lived in St. Albans with five children under five while their husband served abroad. In the freezing winter of 1947, the Mellors moved to Southampton and 3 years later to Bishopstoke. In 1965, Daphne was widowed, and in 1975, she moved to Compton Street. But not before she had arranged a gift of a part of her Bishopstoke garden to the Hampshire Voluntary Housing Association, where accommodation for 19 residents was built. Settled in Compton for the next 35 years, Daphne became active in voluntary work. WRVS, Meals on Wheels, Citizens Advice Bureau and especially Winchester Cathedral. Daphne finally retired when driving became tricky, and she spent her last 5 years in an Otterbourne care home visited by her 4 children, 11 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren. On the day of her cremation, a half-muffled peal was rung in Bishopstoke, where one of the 10 bells in the church had been her gift in memory of her husband.
Comfort blankets sent out with love. In 2005, Susan Gunn's life changed forever. Whilst pregnant with her son Jamie, she found a lump, which turned out to be a rare form of bone cancer called sarcoma. Now the Winchester mother of two wants to help other people diagnosed with life-changing diseases by offering comfort and support. The 29-year-old is part of a project called Sent with Love, which stitches together blankets and posts them around the country to sufferers. It all started from a Facebook page for people with sarcoma, and Susan says she hopes it will offer support to people going through difficult times. I had a bone removed from my leg and now have mobility issues and am in a wheelchair, she said. When I was diagnosed, there wasn't anything like this and it was very lonely. I had my friends and family, but I had never met anyone else with sarcoma. If I had had something like this when I was going through it, it would have been something really special. People can nominate someone for a blanket on the group's Facebook page, and others can donate squares, which are stitched together to form the final piece. It all started with Sarah Kinghorn, who lives in Coventry, when her online friends made her a blanket. She wanted to carry on doing the same for others and join forces with Susan and Anna Hinsel from Dorset and Shelley Green from Middlesex. Susan says she wants more people to find out about the project and to recruit more volunteers. It just makes you feel really happy when you send it out and you know that someone will receive that and know that there are people out there that care about them, she said. And there is a photograph with this article of Susan holding up one of her blankets.
Highways works start at Barton Farm. Works on Winchester's biggest housing development for a decade is due to start next week, a meeting heard. At the first meeting of the North Winchester Community Forum last Thursday, Councillor Kelsey Lerney confirmed that the work will start at Barton Farm next Monday, November the 24th, seeing the first phase of the highway improvement works beginning. Works at Andover Road North continue until December the 19th, stop over Christmas and the New Year, and will restart on January the 5th to be completed by the end of March 2015. Works will be carried out from 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday and 7:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays. Rob Westwood, Carla Holmes Project Director for Barton Farm, said, "We've worked in partnership with our contractors, Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council, to make these preparations which, once complete, will provide safe, convenient access to the site. Local residents have been kept informed and will have access to their homes at all times, and traffic management will be in place to minimise any disruption to the traffic."
The heading on this piece is called "Plan Ahead When It Comes to Boreholes." Users of rural boreholes face difficulties after the disastrously wet winter of 2013-14 has saturated the ground, rendering water supplies unfit to drink. Many estate owners and farms in Hampshire Downland can face problems where boreholes were sunk long before existing regulations came into force, meaning outdated equipment and infrastructure remain commonplace. Should their water supply fail a quality test, the repercussions can be lengthy and expensive. Penalties include up to 2 years in prison for breaking the Private Water Supplies Regulations 2009, legislation that requires local authorities to test the water from private boreholes at least annually, and to conduct a risk assessment within 5 years of the regulations coming into force, which was in January the 1st, 2010. Rural Land Use Surveyor Christopher Turner of Carter Jonas in Winchester said the exceptionally wet winter resulted in larger than usual quantities of organic matter washing into aquifers, leading to failed tests during the summer. Mr. Turner added, in many cases, subsequent inspection by the local authority has resulted in making expensive modifications to meet the new standards. Carter Jonas has been working with borehole owners to conduct independent appraisals of the suitability of existing installations and to offer assistance with upgrading networks to ensure compliance with the regulations without the cost and the time pressure of a full refit that can result from a local authority Section 18(9) notice when a supply fails a quality test. The Met Office is predicting a wetter-than-average winter coming our way, and the last thing borehole owners and their tenants or customers need is a lengthy interruption to water supplies whilst investigations and upgrades are carried out. My advice is for landowners using boreholes to get a network and infrastructure check now under their own steam.
This very sad article concerns a mother of two who was found hanged at the Boomtown Music Festival. A mother of two hanged herself at a festival near Winchester after buying and taking drugs on site, an inquest heard. Lisa Marie Williamson, 31, was found in a toilet cubicle on August the 9th at Boomtown Fair at Matterley Bowl. The Winchester inquest last Wednesday heard that Mrs. Williamson and her husband Darren had bought Class A drugs shortly after arriving on Thursday, August the 7th. Dr. Hayley Burnley, consultant pathologist at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, where Mrs. Williamson was pronounced dead, said toxic levels of amphetamine and cocaine were found in her blood. She said the drugs would not have caused her death, but would no doubt have altered her state of mind. Mr. and Mrs. Williamson had travelled from their home in Hereford, and it was their first festival. They had been married for 8 years and had two young children. The inquest heard that they took drugs frequently on nights out, but Mr. Williamson said they were not addicts. The couple had each taken a gram. They partied with family and friends at the festival and had barely slept since arriving. Mr. Williams said that when they woke up on Saturday, August the 9th, their tent was hot and they were dehydrated. He also saw that his wife's handbag strap was around her neck. "I tried to pull it off her," he said. "She bit me on the hand and hit out at me. At the time, I just put it down to her not wanting to wake up." The beauty therapist said, "You're all out to get me," and ran away in her pyjamas. She was found 2 hours later, hanged with a belt in the toilet. Mr. Williamson said her actions were out of character and added, "I thought she would cool off and come back." He and their family and friends found her as security staff and paramedics were attempting CPR. Graham Short, coroner for Central Hampshire, recorded an open verdict. He said, "I cannot start to imagine how much of a shock this was to you, the family, and you have my very deep sympathy." A police spokesman later said that Mrs. Williams' death was not being treated as suspicious. After the inquest, a spokesman for Boomtown said, "Our deepest condolences go out to Lisa Williamson's friends and family. We take the safety and well-being of our festival attendees incredibly seriously." In January 2014, Boomtown Fair launched an extensive drugs awareness campaign to help educate festival attendees on the physical and mental harm that taking drugs can result in, as well as working closely with Hampshire Police to actively reduce the number of drugs that may be available on site. Last year, 18-year-old Ellie Rowe from Somerset died at the festival after taking horse tranquilizer ketamine. and in 2011, mother of two, Deborah Jeffrey, 45, died of a heart attack after taking ecstasy.
Bumpy start led to 71 happy years. One day in 1939, teenager Charlie Lee saw a girl across the road at Eastleigh Fairground. "I was on a bumper car and Phil was on the other side of the road," he said. "I was with my friends," I said. "There's a really nice girl there. I'll see if I can get hold of her." And he did, for 71 years. Phil and Charlie Lee, who celebrated their wedding anniversary on November 13th, are looking back on a relationship which began all those years ago at the fairground. "They got in my bumper car," Charlie said, "and that's how we met. The first thing I said to her was, 'Can I take you to the pictures?' She said yes." The young couple were married 4 years later at Winchester's registry office. Phil, 91, said, "A long, loving marriage is a simple matter of compromise. It's give and take," she said. "Stay together and give to one another. I don't like the that people keep leaving their marriages. There's nothing wrong with marriage if you love one another." The pair stuck together through several moves from Eastleigh to Winchester, Manchester and Lincoln, where Charlie supervised German prisoners during the Second World War. They moved to Canada, but returned after 8 months because Phil missed her family in Hampshire. The couple, who now live in Hazeldene Gardens, Itchenabbas, had the first of three daughters on their one-year anniversary in 1944. Today they have 9 grandchildren and 17 great-grandchildren, with another youngster on the way. Charlie, 89, said, "When I see them, it's quite a special, but I don't often see them. You can't keep track of them. They're all over the place." And there's a lovely photograph of the two of them, Charlie and Phyllis Lee, celebrating their 71st wedding anniversary at their home in Itchenabbas.
Derelict homes hinder affordable housing. Landlords who fail to look after empty homes are stopping civic chiefs from providing affordable housing, a meeting heard. Winchester Housing boss Councillor Ian Tate said many empty properties, including a boarded-up crack house near the railway station, could be used to boost the city's stock of cut-price flats and houses. More than 400 properties in the district have been empty for more than 6 months, according to council tax records. Housing bosses are considering an official drive to tackle empty homes, Councillor Tate told a meeting of the full council recently. The scheme would include advice for owners, incentives to restore or sell properties, and even compulsory purchase orders, he said, adding that bringing homes into repair is hard work. He said, "We had an octogenarian who didn't want to do anything at all with her empty property, and we had to interview under caution. There are some risks to local authorities when we are effectively threatening a criminal action to a property owner." Councillor Dominic Hiscock said it was particularly disappointing when potentially affordable homes are abandoned. Civic chiefs have repeatedly said that affordable rates are central to their housing strategy. Councillor Tate said, "It's not just frustrating. I find it incredibly disappointing when housing, which is in the affordable bracket, is left empty. What we don't want to do is name and shame, because I think that's counterproductive. But putting pressure on registered providers to ensure that they use the stock for the purpose that it's there for is an important issue."
Inaugural Wine Fest comes to the city. Award-winning wine producers are to feature at the inaugural Winchester Wine Festival this weekend. Jenkin Place and Danebury Vineyards will exhibit at the festival, along with three competitors under the Hampshire Wine Producer banner. The event is the brainchild of married couple Peter Richards and Susan Barry of BBC One's Saturday Kitchen, and will be held at the Guildhall from Friday until Sunday. Camilla Bladden from Jenkin Place, who will be showcasing its 2010 Brut Cuvée, said, "We are very much looking forward to exhibiting at Winchester Wine Festival and showing visitors just how good our Hampshire wines are. Winchester is very much a food destination, and we're confident that people will be tempted to stock up on English sparkling wine to celebrate Christmas. Tickets cost £25 per person per session. There will be four sessions running over the 3 days. Friday, 6 to 9pm, VIP launch at £35. Saturday, 11am to 3pm and 4 to 8pm. And Sunday, 12 till 4pm.
One and all supporting Zach. Olives Battery Primary School pupils donned onesies last Friday to raise money for children with diabetes and support a fellow pupil. 10-year-old Zach McDowell helped his parents and the school to organise the one-day event on behalf of Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation and to raise awareness for type 1 diabetes, of which he was diagnosed 3 years ago. Pupils at the school paid £1 each to come in supporting their favourite onesies. Zach's parents, Alex McDowell and Sarah Dodd of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, have supported the Eastleigh Centre of JDRF since their son's diagnosis and have organised many other fundraising events. Mr McDowell, 34, said the school's done a great job helping Zach to come to terms with diabetes and to help him raise awareness. We're closer to a cure every day. He added, Zach loves getting involved. He'll do as much to raise awareness as he can. Each day when he goes to the office to inject his insulin, he takes a different friend with him so they can see the process. Head teacher Julie Greer said, it's a way to work together and communicate to raise awareness and support Zach and to help children understand how others with diabetes can overcome and manage the disability to have a good and fulfilling education. Miss Dodd, 34, said, it's very overwhelming that all the children have shown support for a friend of theirs. I'd like to thank everybody for their support. And there's a very colourful picture of a lot of these children in their onesies. Zach McDowell with school friends wearing onesies at Olives Battery Primary School to raise funds on World Diabetes Day for JDRF.
TV's Sally to host Cathedral Concert. BBC South Today, Sally Taylor will be presenting this year's Cathedral Carol Concert. The event, which will be held at Winchester Cathedral on Friday, December the 12th, will be an exciting evening of Christmas music sung by the choirs at Winchester Cathedral and international opera singers Claire Rutter and Stephen Gadd. The television presenter will be delivering readings and reflections in between songs, and the concert will start at 7pm. Tickets range in price from £15 to £40 and are available from the Cathedral box office.
New look for charity shop. A Winchester charity has relaunched its shop, selling a range of vintage clothing, electrical items and furniture. Tom O'Connor, business manager at Emmaus Hampshire, said, "We think the refurbishment really offers a view of the future of charity stores as people look for quality, refurbished second-hand goods alongside new items."
Missing licence and oversight. The owner of a Winchester nightclub, which was fined in London's High Court for not having a music licence, has said it was an oversight. Vodka Bar and Nightclub was banned from playing any recorded music until its licence was brought up to date and legal bills of over £1,600 were paid. Calvin Collymore, co-owner, said there's been no break in licence and there have been no problems. It's happened in error and that's been cleared up. Phonographic Performance Limited confirmed the club now has a music licence.
Thugs attack man on way home. Police are appealing for witnesses after a man was left on the floor with serious injuries in an attack in Winchester. He was rushed to hospital with serious head and facial injuries after the unprovoked attack in St Cross last Friday. A 35-year-old man told police he was walking toward Ranelagh Road with a friend at around 3:35 a.m. when they were approached by a group of four men and a woman. Some of the group struck the two men, leaving one injured on the ground. The injured man was taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for treatment. Police are looking to question the driver of a silver people carrier-sized taxi, which was in the area at the time. No arrests have been made. Anyone with information is asked to contact police on 101 or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111, citing crime reference number 441-4040-9904.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Michael Wilde.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.